We are at the third line on the top of the page here on Kuf Yud Tes Amud Aleph. The Gemara is talking about a Braisa. The Braisa had three opinions how the land of Israel was apportioned. According to Rabbi Yoshia, it was given to the families that had left Egypt. Even though those individuals who left Egypt did not enter the land, their descendants inherited the land that, I'd say in quotation marks, their fathers got. Not that literally their fathers took possession, but legally their fathers were considered having been in possession. Then we had the view of Rabbi Yonasan, who said it was actually a composite of both those entering and those who left Egypt. Based on how many were entering, that was the amount of plots that were allocated to the family. But then those plots went back up to the generation that left Egypt, and it came down from the generation that left Egypt to those who were entering the land. And finally, the view of Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, that there was both. Both those who left Egypt got a plot, as well as those entering the land got a plot, each on their own rights. Then we said, the Braisa said that the people who were the spies, they forfeited their portion to Yehoshua and Kalev. And then it said that the members of Korach's group who were complainers also forfeited their portion. They didn't get a portion. And finally, the Braisa ended that the children of these complainers, they got a piece in Israel in the merit of their father's father, namely the parents of the complainers, or in the merit of their fathers, of the fathers of the mothers, namely the fathers of the mothers, the fathers of the wives of the complainers. They may have gotten some land that then if they had no other descendants other than this grandchild would get it because he'd be the extension of the daughter. And that's how there was land, even though there was no land from the fathers who were complainers. Yeah,
Rabbi,
question?
It sounded like when they left Egypt, they got land. You know, is that, you sound, you know.
Well, that's one opinion.
Or,
that it was.
When they reached to Israel, they got the children.
Well, they weren't alive anymore by the time they reached Israel, but the way the land was divided, according to this opinion, was that they took little stones, and on each stone they wrote a name of someone who left Egypt. And they took little stones, and on each stone wrote a name of a place.
Right.
And then they picked the stones that, you know, based on the name of the guy who left Egypt, that was the place he got. And then his children inherited from him. But basically, the land went to him.
Because they had no idea how the land looks like, how it
That's
is.
True. They didn't.
That's why they sent this spy to see what's happening.
That's true. So while
how
they didn't.
How did they divide it without knowing, you know, what's going
well,
on?
Well, through the. Through the Goralot, through the lots that were picked.
Maybe they had drones there those days, right?
<Yeah, they laughs> drones, no. So okay. Again, going back to the Braisa, we're on the third line here of Kuf Yud Tes Amud Aleph. Amar Mar, the Braisa ended by saying, Va'abanim, and the children of the complainers, the children of the spies, Natlu, they got a piece of land, not from their fathers who were spies, because they forfeited their rights to the land, but b'schus avi aviem, through the fathers of the spies. So the fathers of the spies apparently had left Egypt too. And if we say that the end of the Braisa is following the view that those who left Egypt are the ones who got land, so then the grandchildren could inherit from them. And if it wasn't a father of a father, sometimes it would be b'schus avim osayan. Maybe the father of the mother was in a situation where the mother was his only child, so he got land because he left Egypt. And then his daughter inherited, but his daughter wasn't alive, so his grandson inherited, because the child of the daughter is like the daughter. And that's how they got land in Israel. So that's one braisa. Asks the Gemara, Va'atanya, we have a different braisa that says, Bishus Atzman, that the children of the spies, they didn't have any land from their fathers to inherit because their fathers had lost their rights to land because of their negative comments about the land of Israel. But the children of the spies got land in their own rights. So that's against what we just said. Answers the Gemara, Lo Kash, it's not a contradiction. The first brisa that says that they got the land of their grandparents is of the opinion that those who left Egypt are the ones who got land. Therefore, they inherited land from the grandparents who left Egypt. Other brisa that says that they got in their own right. That's according to the view that you get land based on those who entered the land. So then we'll say that they got in their own right, not based on their grandfathers, because they didn't enter the land, but they entered the land, so they got in their own right. Alternatively, I could tell you, maybe both brisos are following the view that those who entered the land were the ones who got land. So one second, why did one brisa say that it was in the merit of grandparents, and the other brisa said in their own merit? Lokash, it's not a contradiction. Ha, the Bryce that says it was in their own merits, the Hava ben Esrim, that those entering the land were 20 years old. So then in their own merits, they could get land. The Bryce that said that they did, namely our Bryce, that they didn't get in their own merit, but they got from their grandfathers. Ha, the Lohava ben Esrim. They weren't 20 when they entered. So therefore, they couldn't get land in their own merit, because they were in 20, but they could get in the merit of their grandparents. So now, so this is a difficult thing. If you say that... So, right, if you say that it's the people who they're getting from their grandparents, so their grandparents were probably not alive when they entered the land. So I thought this is according to the view that those who enter the land get land. The grandparents aren't alive, and they are younger than 20. So you have to say that this is according to the view of Rabbi Shimon Elazar, who said that both those who enter the land and those who left Egypt got. So that's why they couldn't get on their own rights as entering the land, because they were too young. They were younger than 20, but they were inheriting land from their grandparents, because their grandparents had left Egypt. Now their parents had also left Egypt, but their parents lost their rights to land when they complained as part of Korach's group, or when they complained as the spies.
Rabbi, I thought we lost only one generation from Egypt to Israel. Now you sound like two generations, grandfather and the father. Is that?
Well, the grandfathers died in the desert.
Okay, that I understand. Okay, no, but it was one generation that got wiped out.
That's right.
Right?
That's right.
It sounds like two generations.
No, one generation.
You said grandfather and father.
No, we're saying that the land from the grandfather is what the grandchild inherited.
Oh.
Why do we have a discussion
here
about below 20?
We've had that distinction all along. We've said
no, but below 20, they don't get a share.
They don't get a share on their own rights, but their families ended up having land because they inherited from their grandfathers who had left Egypt.
Were there no orphans that left Egypt? Like I was thinking about this yesterday, which is if somebody left Egypt before they were 20 and didn't have any parents, they wouldn't have a share. And assuming they wouldn't have... So what's the equity there? How do the rabbis address that situation?
I don't think they had land. I think they were people who didn't own ancestral land.
So there were people who had the zchus to leave Egypt, but didn't get any share in Eretz Yisrael. That just seems wrong.
It's probably the younger ones. That their name was on it.
So Dayenu is really for them. Dayenu is really for these people.
It became rent.
Yeah, this was a terrible situation.
They were leasers. They had to make money. They'd buy land every yovel. They'd have to give it back. Yeah, they didn't have land. They didn't have ancestral land.
They paid the rent.
Yes, Izzy, what's your question?
I'm sorry, I think yesterday we say if the grandfather left Egypt, there will still be count if they stole to the Mishpacha.
Right.
Not saying because before Baruch
Hashem. Now, this is according to the view of Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. According to the view of Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, both those who enter the land, as well as those who left Egypt, were entitled to a portion in Israel. And that's the portion that the grandchildren inherited They inherited the portion that of the grandfather who had a portion because he had left Egypt. Okay, so going back to the Mishnah, the reason how we got into this whole conversation is that the Mishnah taught that the daughters of Tzlafchad had three plots of land. They got one plot of land from their father, Tzlafchad, and they got two plots of land that their father had gotten from his father, Chefer. So this Mishnah is following the view that the land of Israel was apportioned to those who left Egypt. Both Chefer and Tzlafchad left Egypt. So they both were entitled to land. Tzlafchad because he left Egypt, and Chefer because he left Egypt. Tzlafchad was the Bechor. He was the firstborn of Chefer. Since he was the firstborn of Chefer, now he's dead. So his daughters, once it was established that they could take his place, so his daughters got two pieces, because a Bechor gets a double portion. So they got the double portion.
The pieces they got from Chefer, is that the same size? I mean, it seems to be subdivided among the brothers.
It was, that's right, it was subdivided.
It's not a full piece, it's a piece, and yeah. A quarter of a piece, and
that's
an
right.
Eighth of a piece.
That's right.
It's not full pieces. Right?
That's right, yeah.
Are they all Menashe only have 10 portions alone?
No, we said yesterday that Menashe had six families, which are mentioned, and then all those families, it was divided up amongst them. And then we said, but within those divisions, within those major Batei Av, in terms of the details of those who entered Israel, four need to be mentioned in particular, the four portions that went to the daughters of Tzlafchad.
And how does that jive that there were so many more people who either left Egypt or went into Israel? They're all one family, is the point? There's different groups?
No, Menashe has six sons. Those are the six families. If you take a Chumash, right? A Parshas Pinchas.
30,000, 50,000 people, something?
Wait, Wait, we have here, right? Let's look in Parshas Pinchas, right? Le'ela Techalik. These are the ones who get the land. So in Parshas Pinchas, the Torah says that... Right, Leila Techale Ka'aretz Benachalav Mispar Shemos. To these you will divide up the land. And then the Torah mentions the whole story of these. Before that, the Torah mentioned all the different families. So, Bnei Yosef L'Mishpachosam. From Yosef you had Menashe and Ephraim. And now from Menashe you had Machir and. Machir gave birth to Gilad, and from Gilad you had Eezer, and Chelek, and Ashriel, and Shechem, and Shmida, and Chefer. So you have these six major families.
But
then they have, within these families, there are thousands of people. They have 52,700. But the major families, there are six major families, and within them, there were 52,700 descendants.
So it sounds like Dosloch is getting 40% of Menashe's chelek.
That's what Gemara said. It's not true. The Gemara said, that was the Gemara's question yesterday. The Gemara said that can't be, right? It can't be that they got 40%. They're just...
Four.
They were referenced because they are. It's to teach us halachos.
Okay.
That there are six major families of Menashe.
But every 20-year-old got a piece, which is it's just every nice 20-year-old to know got a piece. Major families.
How many adult men were there that entered Eretz Yisrael?
About 600,000.
The same number that left is the same number that went in.
That's the number
that
got
left.
Yeah, but they all died out.
Right, but according to the position that the people who entered Eretz Yisrael received the chelek, not the people who left.
Right.
According to that shita, how many people entered Eretz Yisrael?
Yeah, 603,550.
Okay, so Eretz Yisrael was split up into 603,000 essentially.
550 plots. And in each family got a plot.
Project managing that.
Now, because Tzlafchad was a firstborn, he got a double portion, and his daughters got that double portion. So the Gemara asks, Vamai, but why should the daughters get a double portion in Chefer's property? Rauihu, Chefer himself, as Baruch pointed out, left Egypt and died in the desert. He had never actually entered the land. So the land of Israel to him was only something which was fitting to come to him. He deserved to get. It was on its way to him. But he didn't actually have it. Ain't a bechor noto beroy kibemuchzak. A firstborn is not entitled to get a double portion in assets that are on their way to the father. He's only entitled to a double portion in assets that were actually the possession of the father had control over. But Chefer never had control over any land in Israel. So why is Tzlafcha getting a double portion in the land of Israel of Chefer's property? We're going to give the same answer. So first, here we talk about it in greater length. So the Gemara suggests answer number one. Amar Rav Yehuda. Rav Yehuda said that Amar Shmuel, the name of Shmuel, B'yizdos Olim. We're not talking about land. We're talking about movables, his camping goods, his tents, his pegs, his table, his sleeping bag. So those, they got a double portion in those goods. So Masav Rabbah, so Rabbah challenged Rav Yehuda. We learned that Rav Yehuda Omer, Rav Yehuda says, in the Braisa, B'no Tzlafchad Natlu Arba Chalakim, the daughters of Tzlafchad end up getting four plots. As the verse says, Vayiplu Chavle Menasha Sara. There were 10 portions in Menasha. 6 go to the 6 families. And 4 are of the daughters of Tzlafchad. So 2 of those 4 from the daughters of Tzlafchad are the Bechora. 1 is the and then, as we'll see, the other two are either, we saw yesterday, the other two were either brothers, or one was Tzlafchad and one was a brother who died without children. So that's what the pasuk says. So it's obviously talking about land. It's not talking about movables. Elam Arabah, so rather Rabbah gave the big answer. The daughters of Tzlafchad got a double portion in Hefer's plots. I, Hefer, never entered Israel. That's true. But since the land of Israel was divided according to those who left Egypt, Eretz Yisrael muhzekesi, the land of Israel is legally considered the actual possession of those who left Egypt, not just something which they would get, but something that they had already gotten and possessed, and therefore they could get a double portion in that. Nesve, I'll challenge you, we learned. I'm Reb Chitka. Reb Chitka said in a braisa, Shimon HaShikmoni HaYolichaver. Shimon HaShikmoni was my friend. He was Mitalmidi Rabbi Akiva. He was a student of Rabbi Akiva. V'chachay Reb Shimon HaShikmoni Omer. And this is what Reb Shimon HaShikmoni used to say. The pasuk says that the daughters of Tzlafchad came with complaints to Moshe Rabbeinu, and Moshe brought the question to Hashem. So Reb Shimon HaShikmoni used to say like this: Yodeya Yo Moshe Rabbeinu Shibno Tzlafchad Yorshosein. Moshe Rabbeinu knew that the daughters of Tzlafchad should inherit because Tzlafchad died without sons. If a person dies without sons, his daughters inherit. So Moshe Rabbeinu knew that the daughters inherit. He didn't know would they be entitled to the portion of a firstborn or not. So all these laws of inheritance should have come like every other law in the Torah. Hashem commands Moshe to teach the rest of the Jews, and Moshe teaches the Jews. That's the way it should have been. But it didn't come like that. It comes through the daughters of Tzlafchad complaining, Moshe going to ask God what he should do, God then telling, came b'no Tzlafchad Dovros, the daughters of Tzlafchad are right, and these are the laws of inheritance. So why was it taught in this unusual way? Elashazachu b'no Tzlafchad. This is a merit to the daughters of Tzlafchad, v'nichtav al yadan, that the Torah's laws of inheritance should be written through them, that they should be the ones to teach it to us. In Parashat Shlach, the Torah says that the Jews found a man who was Mekoshesh Eitzim, Now, what exactly that means are different opinions. Let's take the simplest opinion. He was pushing wood together to make fire of the wood on Shabbos. He was violating Shabbos. So of course they knew he's supposed to die. Shenamar, as the verse says about Shabbos, Mechalel Le'amos Yumas, one who violates Shabbos should be put to death. But he didn't know which death he should get. So really, we should have had Psukim in the Torah, which say that if a man violates Shabbos, there's a death, and the death is stoning. If there were witnesses who warned the person, but why didn't we have that? Elishan Ischayev Makoshesh. Because the one who gathered the wood was a guilty man. And so since he was guilty, Nichtaval Yado. So it was all taught through him, through his story. The La Metcha, this is to teach you the following principle. Megalglin Schus Al Yedei Zakai. Good things happen through good people. V'chov Al Yedei Chayev. And bad things happen through bad people. So the good news of how to inherit and all the laws of inheritance comes about through good people. So Bnos Lachad are good people. Their intentions are for the sake of heaven, and they're trying to get closer to God and to preserve their father's legacy. So therefore, through them, we hear the story and the laws of inheritance. The Mekoshesh, the man who gathered the wood on Shabbos and he violated Shabbos, was a bad man. And because he was a bad man, we hear the negativity through him.
This is a remarkable story, because the wood gatherer was to left.
That's right. It is a remarkable lesson. It's really an amazing display of the daughters fixing the crime of their father. Their father is the example of the chayav, the guilty man, who because of his guilt, we hear about guilt. And his daughters are the example of the zakai, of the meritorious person, that through their merits, we hear about other good, meritorious people.
And so they become the victim of the father's behavior? Is that what it is, the daughters?
Why are you saying that they're the victim of the father's behavior?
Because the father was bad, then the daughters, the kids are on the blacklist, is that what you're saying?
No, the exact opposite. The father was bad, but the kids were righteous. The kids merited through their holiness to get a portion of the land.
Okay.
Because it was through their holiness that they got a portion of the land, they also were able to teach the laws of getting portions in the land, all through them, because good things come through good people. Yeah, question, David. Well, it doesn't say it explicitly, but according to some opinions, this story of the Mekoshesh, the Torah does not identify his name. He was Tzlafchad, the same man that they say. Because they said he died, but he didn't die from the sin of Korach. He didn't die from the sin of the spies. He didn't die from the sin of the complainers. But what did he die from? They just say a sin. So it could be it was this very sin of the Mekoshesh.
Is that possible? They stoned him because he violated the Shabbat?
If he's the Mekoshesh, yeah, then he was stoned.
Wow, I
thought they spiritually die, not physically. No. So now asks the Gemara, V'Salka Daita. Now if you're going to think to say that Eretz Yisrael Muhzeket, the land of Israel, is legally considered already in the possession of those who left Egypt. When they were in the desert, they were considered in possession of Israel. So Maikom Estapkale, so why is Moshe Rabbeinu in doubt? When the daughters of Tzlafchad come to ask, he should say right away, yes, you get the double portion, because you are, if he knows that they inherit, he should know that they should inherit a double portion. So answers the Gemara, he gufa come Estapkale. That itself was Moshe Rabbeinu's doubt. He wasn't sure whether the land of Israel was considered the possession already of those who left Egypt, or that which is going to come to those who left Egypt, but not that it was already their possession. That was his very doubt. And that's based on the question of how to read a verse. The verse says that Hashem tells Moshe to tell the Jewish people, I'm going to bring you into the land of Israel. V'nasati osah lachem, I'm going to give it to you, you who are leaving Egypt. Morasha, ani Hashem, it's a morasha. So now what does the word morasha mean? Now morasha normally means that which is transmitted over. So is morasha, it's transmitted over, but also Yerusha Hilachem Yavosechem. It's something that you've inherited from your fathers. Odilmer, maybe it's Mo Rasha Shemorishin. They transmit it. They Einan Yorshin, but they do not inherit it. They transmit it to their children, but they do not have any inheritance in it. They don't own it themselves. So the Gemara says, Upashtuleis, the Moshe Rabbeinu. Eventually, his conclusion is that Tarvayu, that it is actually both things. On the one hand, the land is Yerusha Lachem, Me'avoseichem. The land is a Yerusha, it is an inheritance. Our ancestors who left Egypt owned it. In addition, Umorishin, Ve'enon Yorshin. In another sense, they gave it to their children, but they never got it because they died. So they never actually entered into the land to take possession of that which was supposed to be theirs. In a similar sense, we have the psukim in the Song of the Sea, where again, the people sense that they are not going to actually enter the land. That's what they say when they sing of the splitting sea. To the Emo, you will bring them, the sea to Emo, and you will plant them, Bahar Nachlascha, in your mountain of inheritance. To the Enu Lo Ne'emar, they don't say you will bring us. You will plant us. You will bring them. But they just crossed the sea, and they're expecting that they're going to the land of Israel. Ela tivi emo, you will bring them. Malame that misnabim and yodamah misnabim, that even when they were crossing the sea, they were saying a prophecy. You will bring them. You won't bring us. They didn't know it, but their souls knew it. Their mouths said it. Their mouths said what was accurate. Them, the children of those who crossed the sea, will be brought into the land and given Jerusalem and the temple. But those who actually crossed the sea, they will not end up getting Jerusalem and the temple. So it's not Tivi Einu, you will bring us, but Tivi Emo, you will bring him, the Sita Emo, and you will plant them in your holy mountain. Because it was a Mo Rasha, in the sense that those who left Egypt, they never actually took possession. They just had it to give it over to their children. But in terms of giving it over to their children, it was a Yerusha. It was considered muhzekes in their hands, so that the Bechor could get a double portion in the land. Okay, now the Gemara will discuss the psukim about the daughters of Tzlafcha. The Torah says, the daughters of Tzlafchad, who was the son of Hefer, who was the son of Gilad, who was the son of Machir, who was the son of Menasheh, from Menashe ben Yosef, they came. Who are the daughters? Machla, Noah, Chagla, Milka, and Tirza. So these five daughters, Vata'amodna lifnei Moshe, v'lifnei Elazar HaKohen, they stood before Moshe and before Elazar, and in front of all the princes, the Chala Eidan, in front of the whole nation, Pesach Oel Moed, at the entrance to the Mishkan, to the tent of meeting. So now it's a strange pasuk. Let's read it again. V'tamodna, and they stood, Lifnei Moshe, before Moshe, V'lifnei Elazar HaKohen, and before the Kohen Gadol Elazar the Kohen, V'lifnei Anasiim, and before the princes, v'chala eda, and the entire community. So one second. If you have a question, first you ask your local rabbi. If he doesn't know, you then ask the larger court. If they don't know, you go to the Sanhedrin. If they don't know, you go to the Kohen Gadol. If they don't know, you go to Moshe Rabbeinu. But here was the opposite. They went to Moshe Rabbeinu, then they're asking the Kohen Gadol. What? The Kohen Gadol is going to know more than Moshe? The Nesiyim will know more than Moshe? The whole order doesn't make sense. So Efshar Amdu Lifnei Moshe, is that possible? They stand before Moshe. He doesn't know. V'lo Amru Lehem Davar. He doesn't give them an answer. So then V'amdu Lifnei Hanesiim. So then they go after Moshe and Aaron to stand in front of the princes. And then the princes don't know. They go and ask the Sanhedrin. V'cholo Eda. Ela Saresa Mikra V'dar Shehu. Divir Reb Yoshia. So Reb Yoshia says, okay, you've got to just cut up the pasuk and rearrange the words. So the pasuk is out of order. Really, they went to the Eda, to the Sanhedrin. And the Sanhedrin didn't know, they then went to the Nesiim. And the Nesiim didn't know, they went to the Elazar, to the Kohen Gadol. When Elazar didn't know, they went to Moshe Rabbeinu. So it's out of order. Divrei Rabbi Yoshe, that's the view of Rabbi Yoshe. However, Abba Hanan Om Mishum Rabbi Elazar, Abba Hanan says the name Rabbi Elazar. It's not that they went to Moshe, then to Elazar the Kohen, then to the Nesiim, then to the Eda. They went to Moshe, and he was in the Beis Medrash. Beis Medrash, are you Yoshvin? Moshe Rabbeinu and Elazar the Kohen Gadol and the Nesiim and the Sanhedrin, they were all sitting in the Beis Medrash. And the daughters of Tzlafcha go and stand in front of all of them. So it's not that the order is Moshe first and then Elazar. It was everybody all at once. Since it was everyone all at once, so it lists Moshe, Elazar, and the Nesiim and the Eda. But they had asked everybody all together. All right, but Michael Miflugi, what's the argument? Whether they asked everybody all together, or they just asked the Eda, and then the Nesiim, and then Elazar, and then they went to Moshe. So Mar Savar, so the opinion that said that they could ask everybody all together, is Cholkin Kavod L'Talmid B'Makom Arav. And even though the Rebbe, Moshe Rabbeinu, was there, they could ask a question of Moshe Rabbeinu's students. Like you might think it's not right. When you have a Rebbe here, how do you ask the students? You have to ask the Rebbe. The student has to respect the Rebbe. So you also need to respect the Rebbe. But nope, this opinion holds that the Rebbe wants you to give respect to his students. He knows that his students only know because he taught them. So he's happy that you ask the student and let the student answer. So if a Rebbe is happy that the honor of the student is really honor to him, it's reflected honor back to him. So you're giving honor to the student even though the Rebbe is there. So then they ask the question to all of them together. That's the view of Rebbe Elazar. However, Marsav, Rabbi Yosha is of the opinion, Ein Cholkin, that you're never supposed to be giving honor to a student in front of his Rebbe. So then how could it be? They came and they asked everybody all together. They couldn't ask everyone all together. What, Moshe Rabbeinu is an equal to Elazar? Is an equal to the Eda? Is an equal to the Nesiim? No, they'd have to ask Moshe separately. So then it would have to be that they didn't go first to Moshe, and then when he doesn't know, they then go to Elazar. That makes no sense. Then you have to say that you have to cut up the pasuk and rearrange the words. They went first to the Eda, they asked them, they didn't know. Then they left them, they went to another tent, the tent of the Nesiim. They asked the Nesiim, the princes don't know. They left the princes, they go to another tent, the tent of Elazar, the Kohen Gadol. He doesn't know, then they leave him and they go to Moshe Rabbeinu. And that would be because that would be the view that you couldn't have them asking the students in front of their teacher, because that would be an insult to Moshe Rabbeinu. The Hilchasa, the Halacha is Cholkin. You can ask a student in front of his teacher because it's not a disrespect to the teacher. It's giving respect to the teacher. The teacher wants you to give honor to the student. And you can't give honor to the student in front of the teacher. So what do you mean? You just contradicted yourself. The halach is that you can do it. The halach is that you can't do it. So what are you supposed to do? The man says, lo, it's not a contradiction. Ha, depalagle rabba yakre. If you see that the teacher himself is giving honor to the student, so then, if that's the way the teacher acts, you can go in front of the teacher and student and give honor to the student in front of the teacher. Ah, when we said the halacha is not to give honor to the student in front of the teacher, delo palagle rabbi yakre, when the teacher does not give honor to the student. So if the teacher doesn't give honor to the student, so now who are you to go be asking the student in front of the teacher? That's a disgrace to the teacher. So then, the halacha would be that you need to ask the teacher and not ask the student.
Wait, what? Yeah, question. Approach that we reverse the puzzle. Isn't that a little dangerous? It's one thing you do in the Mishnah, you do in the Brisa, okay. But do it in the actual Torah. It's a little...
Yeah, but apparently sometimes we do that. We do have the ability
to
do
that. Places, do we do that too?
Yeah. Oh. So earlier, Gorin, Mosif, and Vidorshin, we find it, yeah, sometimes.
Didn't they set up a whole court system? You were supposed to go to the tent.
That's right.
So if you have the court system set up, then even if Moshe was there, you should not be going to Moshe. You should be going to the lower level first.
So
if there's already a system set up, of course you should be following that system. Why is
maybe not? The system is that you go to the courts. and without Moshe being there. But if Moshe happens to be in that court that day, you don't ask the lower people, you ask Moshe. It's an insult.
And you'd be undermining the whole system that was set up.
Moshe's not normally in the courthouse, but when he's in the courthouse, Moshe's the one who decides.
Rabbi, these are all sounds like it happened before Yitro comes and sets up the system.
No, it's much later. It's 40 years after Yitro.
So, but then Moshe was really on the top. They had to go to lower court and come on up, right?
That's the question.
Here it sounds like they went from the top and came down.
Well, they didn't go from the top to go down, but either they went to the base medrash where Moshe was with everyone, or they went first to the lower, then to higher, and then eventually to Moshe.
By going to everybody at the same time, they didn't make anyone feel bad that they didn't know the halacha. So they all felt bad at the same time, which is really not real, because it's a consolation that someone else doesn't know.
But maybe you should never feel bad by not knowing the halacha. It's exciting. Now you get to learn a new thing.
So
it's a good thing.
But the human nature isn't like that. And these people, they're all human after all.
Maybe.
When God made aware that everybody still was a human.
Okay, but still. Tana, we learned in a brisa. Benos Tzalafchad, the daughters of Tzalafchad, Chachmani Yosein. They were very wise in terms of courtesy. Darshani Yosein, they knew how to interpret Torah, and Sidkani Yosein, they were very pious. Chachmani Yosein, we see that they're very wise in human relations. Shalafisha Dibru, they chose the right moment to speak up. Am Rav Shmuel Bar Rav Yitzchak, Shmuel Bar Rav Yitzchak explained, Malamit Shaya Moshe Rabbeinu Yoshe Vidorish Parshas Yivamin. Moshe Rabbeinu was sitting and teaching the law of Yibam. That namely, Shenamar, as the Pasuk says, Ki Yesh V'Achim Yachtav, if two brothers are living together. And then Mesechad Mehen, one dies without a child. So his widow should not go out to marry a stranger. Rather, her Yavam, his brother, should marry her. So the Pasuk says, Uvein Ein Lo, if he doesn't have a child. So, and he went further. Ben Einlo. Einlo, as we said before, Einlo. If he doesn't have a Yena love, you have to look. If there is a descendant, if there is a daughter, then there is no Yibum. So Amru Lo. So then right away they spoke up. They said, one second. Im ki ben anu chashuvin. If we are considered sons, that's why if we are around, our mother doesn't have to have Yibum. So it's nulanu nachla ki ben. So then we should be able to get an inheritance like a son. And if we're not sons, then we don't get an inheritance. So to siyabe mimenu, so let our mother be obligated in Yibum. Miyad, so right away, vayakrev Moshe, mishpatan lifnei Hashem. Moshe brought their question before God. So you see that they were wise. They chose the right moment to speak up. When Moshe is talking about Yibum and teaching that a daughter of a person exempts the widow from Yibum. So he says, one second, that means a daughter is like a son. So if a daughter is like a son, that she exempts a person from Yibum, so a daughter should be like a son, she should be able to inherit too. Darshani Yosein, and they were experts in Torah. Shayu Omros, because they said, Ilu Hayu Lo Ben, had our father had a son, Lo Dibarnu, we wouldn't have asked for anything. If he would have had a son, he wouldn't have asked for anything. So they're saying, but he doesn't have a son. So that's why we are demanding a child. So you see, we're demanding inheritance. So you see that they are, they're very wise in Torah. Asks the Gemara of Tanya, we have a Bryce that says an unusual thing. It says, if he would have had a daughter, we wouldn't have asked anything. Vas. I'm Rabbi Yirmiyah. Rabbi Yirmiyah said, Samimi kan bas. You have to take out that word bas, because after all, they are the daughters. I can't say if we would have had a daughter, then we wouldn't have spoken. Abai Amar Abai explained that, Braisa. What they were saying was like this. Afilu haya bas laben. Even if there would have been a daughter to a son, namely, even if we would have had a brother, and the brother died, but he would have left over a daughter, Lo dibarnu, we wouldn't have protested, because the daughter of our brother would be considered our brother. You see that Darshani Yosein, they knew the halacha. And Tzidkani Yosein, and they were very righteous. Shlo Nisu Elohagun Lahen, they would only marry someone who was worthy of them, who was as righteous as they are. and they married someone from their tribe. You see that they were very righteous, that they insisted on waiting to marry someone from their tribe. Tani Rebbe Elazar ben Yaakov. Rebbe Elazar ben Yaakov taught, it took a long time, Afilu Ktana Shebehen, even the youngest of the five daughters of Tzlafchad, Lo Niseis Pchusa Me'arbaim Shana. She didn't get married younger than age 40. Asks Gemara Eini, is that so? I've Amar of Chizda, Bar of Chizda set a rule. Niseis Pchusa Me'bas Esrim. If a woman gets married younger than 20, Yoledes Ad Shishim. She's going to start giving birth, and once she starts giving birth, she stays fertile till age 60. Bas Esrim, if she only gets married at age 20, Yoledes Ad Arbaim. She'll be fertile until age 40. Basar Bun, if she gets married at age 40, Shuveni Yoledes, she's not going to be fertile at all, she's not going to have children. And here you're saying that the daughters of Tzlafchad, the youngest, didn't get married before 40. The answer is, Elmitoch Shatit Kanyo, saying because we just established that they were very righteous, they were waiting to marry a righteous person from within their tribe. Nasalahen Nes, they had the miracle, Ki Yocheved, like Yocheved, the mother of Moshe Rabbeinu. The Chsiv, the Pasuk says, Vayelech Ishmi Beis Levi, Vayikachas Bas Levi. A man from the house of Levi went and married the daughter of Levi. Efshar Basmeya Ushloshim Shana. 1 second, unbelievable. She's a woman who's 130 years old. Vekara La Bas, and she's called a daughter, as if she's a young person. I didn't know she was 130. Damar Rabchama Rabchanina. How do you get to 70 people in Parshas Vayikach? There are only 69 names. But Zo Yocheved, the 70th is Yocheved, Shaorasa Baderech, she became pregnant, her mother became pregnant with her on the road down to Egypt, Venolda Ben Achomos, and she was born as they were entering the gates. The Chsev, as the Pasuk says, Asher Yolda Osel Levi B'Mitzrayim, that she had given birth to Levi, given birth to Yocheved, for Levi had this daughter Yocheved in Egypt. Leidasa B'Mitzrayim, her birth was in Egypt, Horasa Shalom B'Mitzrayim, she became conceived outside of Egypt. So Vamai Kari Labas, why is she called a Bas, a daughter? So I'm Rav Yehuda Bar Zvida. Malamed Shenodul Basi Mane Nairus. She became again like a young girl. This Adin HaBasar, all the wrinkles in her flesh cleared out. The skin became smooth. This Pashtu Hakmatim. The Chazar Ayofilim Komo, and the beauty came back. So that's why she was called a Bas. She was like a young person. So just like Yocheved, because she was righteous, even at age 130, could have a child, Moshe Rabbeinu, the daughters of Tzlafchad, because they were righteous, even though they married at age 40 at the youngest, were able to have children, even though normally one who marries at age 40 does not have children. Kaddish Drabanan.